the ad hoc consultant selection subcommittee for the Little Papio Channel Stabilization Project is now called to order. I have here a copy of the Notification of Open Meetings Act posting announcement of the meeting procedure in my hand. I believe it's in the back of the room, too, right, or something like that. All right. Quorum call.
Lady.
Here.
Kirk Conley. John Conley.
Here.
Fowler.
Here.
Wu.
Here.
And we have Alton.
T-shirt.
Jim Thompson.
Here. Okay. The adoption of the agenda.
So move.
Second.
Will?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jim Thompson?
Yes.
John Conley?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. All right. I screwed up number two and number five, so we're just going to go ahead now with the Open Meetings Act posting announcement. So prior to turning to the agenda for tonight's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations, then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask the public not interrupt the director's discussion action. Thank you. So now we're on to number six, review and recommendation of initial screening of proposals, consultant selection interviews, Mr. Martin Cleveland.
Thank you. In the proposals that were submitted by the consultants, there were four different categories of things that we asked them to provide in their reports, their proposals. And first one was project understanding and approach. Second was project organization and adequacy of staff, location of personnel. The third thing was similar projects completed by the firm. And the fourth was qualifications of professional personnel and staff members. So there were six proposals, Bernson McDonald, EA Engineering, FIRA, HDR, and then JO, and then also Intuition and Logic, which is hard to say sometimes, Intuition and Logic. On the project understanding and approach, we felt like Bernson McDonald was fair on their approach. It wasn't quite as good as the other proposals. EA, we thought they had a good approach and understanding of the problem. As a side note, EA did come up and meet with me on this project, went out and looked at it too, so I know that they were actively involved in evaluating what was out there. FIRA, it was good. HDR, we thought was very good. They, have, of course, worked in this project. They've worked in Little Papio. They understand Little Papio and Big Papio really well, so they had a very thorough, I think, evaluation of what was going on there. JO was good. And Intuition Logic was good, but we think that probably they're slanted a little bit too much towards the bioengineering approach on stream restoration, stream repairs. Really not allowed to do much of that with a federal project like this. We're kind of restricted by the requirements of the Corps, which is basically a structural techniques, not really planting shrubs and trees and things like that. That's kind of what Intuition Logic really does a lot of and they're really good at, but that's really not probably the place for it here. Number two, the project organization and location of staff. Burns and McDonald have some staff in Omaha, and their adequacy of staff we think is probably fair. EA, they're located in Lincoln. Their staff are okay. They're not maybe as good as some other firms, but they're okay. FIRA, the Omaha location, we felt like their staff maybe weren't quite as skilled in geotechnical issues as some other firms that we're going to propose tonight. HDR is Omaha location, very experienced staff. JO is Omaha location. They also have experienced staff as well. One of the big things with the staff is have they worked with the Corps in the past, and FIRA has, HDR has, JO has, all those have did a lot of work with the Corps, so they're very experienced in what the Corps expects. Intuition Logic is Missouri location. It's in St. Louis. The project manager is actually located in St. Louis. They do have some Omaha-based people to be working with them, subcontractors. We think that's probably a negative in terms of the fact that they're in Missouri. It's going to cost you more money probably as a result. Similar projects completed by the firm, Burns and McDonald, little local experience. Some experience with ponds and their levees, but that's not really the same as the things that we're looking at here. So we thought their experience was pretty light. Yeah, EA Engineering has experience in Lincoln, a number of creeks, Roper Creek and Salt Creek. Fire has a little bit of experience, but not as much as the other firms. HDR has Omaha and Council Bluffs experience, Little Pappy, Big Pappy, Mosquito Creek. JO has Lincoln and Omaha experience. Intuition Logic has Lincoln and then Missouri experience. A lot of bioengineering stuff, but it's mostly in Missouri. And, of course, Missouri is a little bit different than Nebraska. I mean, there are some things different between the two states. Number four, the qualification of professional personnel and staff members. Burns McDonald's, again, we think is fair. It's not great, but fair. EA, maybe a little bit light. They have some experienced staff, but maybe not as much as I'd like to see in this kind of repair work. Fire, again, is a little light, we think, in the geotechnical slough repair type of work. HDR, we think, is very good. JO, we think, is good. Intuition Logic, we believe, are good as well. Again, Intuition Logic has some negatives because of the bioengineering background and also the location where they're at. So based upon the review of that, what management recommended was to go with interview the three firms, EA Engineering, HDR Engineering, and JO Consulting Group is what we'd recommend out of those six consultants. And so that's kind of the background, how it came about that decision, I guess. I'd be happy to respond to any questions you may have about that.
All right. Appreciate it. Do we have any questions?
I'd like to make a motion.
All right. Motion?
Yes. I move approval of management's recommendation.
Do we have a motion? Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion and second. Public, anyone in the public have anything to add? No? Reuters? Thompson.
Thank you.
Martin,
as we look at HDR's submittal,
okay,
on page 6, it talks about photo shows existing repair of this field. Topsoil can be placed over it to establish vegetation. Is that normal? Throw a bunch of dirt on there and throw seeds? So wouldn't that be running off in the first rainfall?
They're referring to put riprap down first. Let me just take a quick look.
Well, it's right next to the slough that on that. There's okay. Two pictures they put, page 6.
What they're referring to there, Jim, is to place riprap on top of the that slope is basically bare, and then put rip soil over top of that. One of the requirements of the Corps of Engineers locally here is to, when you put riprap in the creek, you're required to cover it with soil and then try to seed it and then get it vegetated. Now, staff-wise, we don't always believe that works, but that's a requirement of the Corps, and so I think that's why they probably referred to that comment. And it is ideal if you can get vegetation to grow. That's ideal. A lot of times it doesn't happen because you get a big flow event and it washes all the soil down the creek. But riprap would be the thing they put in first here. What they're basically saying is that particular slope, they think, is probably maybe stable. What's there is stable, and just place riprap on top of that slope that's basically vertical, so you have some coverage of protection against erosion.
More importantly, on that page, on the top of the right side, the construction of rock-filled trenches for slides moved but has not completely failed. I read that, and I know we tried that by the Baxter Arena, and that's right. I assume that picture is right there. Yeah. What are they saying that design wasn't it moved? Right. It's okay yet. It hasn't failed yet. Explain that to me if you could.
What they're saying is that that particular location, the slough basically dropped about 2 feet, and the mass of soil was essentially still there. And unlike some of these other spots, like the picture next to it. The soil's basically all gone. It's all kind of went away. The one at Baxter Arena was still there, so you can physically go and cut in the rock trenches and make it still stable. In the case of the word soil's already gone, you can't do that because it's already gone. You got to rebuild that slope somehow.
So are they saying the rock field trenches moved or the dirt?
No, the slough had moved before they put the rock trenches in. Okay. The slough basically had is a slurpier failure, so it actually rotated a little bit, but its mass of soil was still there. So when the mass of soil is still there, you can repair it one way, but if it's all gone, you got to repair it differently. You got to put in fill. You got to basically rebuild that slope that's already gone. In this case, it's not really gone, just basically slipped or moved down. And so there's different techniques. What they're suggesting is the techniques for repair is not just one solution for every slough that we see. And all these consultants basically said there's probably more than one idea. We really hope at the end of this project what comes out of it is we have a couple of schemes or formats for repairs. We can replicate that in-house and not have to hire a consultant for every time we have a slough repair. We get some experience through this one project with 11 sloughs, so maybe we'll have two or three things that we know will work well for this type of scenario. The other thing that these consultants are doing and looking at, we'll be looking at for us is there some global issue with the Lopapia that maybe is triggering these sloughs? Is it such as degradation of the stream bed? If that's the case, maybe we need to go ahead and put some grade control devices along the creek as well as trying to repair the sloughs. Not just Band-Aid fixing the thing. If we just fix the slough, that's good, great for that one spot, but maybe it's not really solved the global problem like we're experiencing at the Furniture Mart with that sand boil. And the Blue Cross is a sand boil going on. That could imply there's a global issue there, that the bed of the stream is getting thin enough that we have artesian pressures and we're starting to lose some of the soil out of the banks. So a consultant can look at that global issue. What is the global problem here? Is there some way to solve it maybe? Besides this, the slough repairs, which are important too.
Thank you.
My question for in general, I'm thinking. Received this packet like 10 days ago, and I've gotten more information in the last 10 minutes. Why weren't we privy to the information that you gave us now, 10 days ago? I'm afraid that we get too much information. I'm baffled.
Okay, what we sent out to the board, I think, was probably a map that shows the 11 locations.
I'm not talking about the map. I got the map, and I got you. I got all the proposals there.
Okay.
Because I didn't. That's all we got. Now, I'm not negating your professional opinion, but why didn't we have that information at the same time we got this?
Really, what?
The ranking that you've done with the firms and so forth. I'm baffled that we get this and I get here and you've already got three firms picked out and I spent 12, 15 hours reading these things.
Right. It's still, it's director's decision. We're just trying to provide
some. Hours are long, the pay is uncertain. I understand that.
Some guidance, yeah. And so really the thing is we don't really know the answer to this question either. That's why you hire a consultant to come on board. You're going to spend some money to do this, but they're going to provide some direction for you. We know there's some problems. A consultant, engineering consultant.
Okay.
So what we hire, JEO, whoever it may be, that person, that firm will be analyzing the creek, evaluating what's going on, what's triggering these sloughs, and how to solve them.
I'm aware of all that. You're not answering my question.
Okay. I guess I don't understand, Director Wood. What
you spent the first 15 minutes with three different categories and put the firms in each one of those categories.
Yeah. Right.
Why weren't we, as an ad hoc committee, given that information?
Can jump in, I think the answer to this is they got the proposals the same time we got the proposals, so they had to have their time to read through them and to analyze them and then give us their opinion, just like we have the time to read through them and analyze, and then we can either take their opinion and accept it or take their opinion.
Are you missing the question, too?
Yeah.
The professional staff, why aren't we in contact with them? Why don't we have them tell us what they think as well as what we think.
Did you call them, Director Woodall?
Beg your pardon?
Did you contact them to ask them these questions?
No, I didn't.
Well, how are they supposed to know what to answer?
You could have told me the same thing 10 days ago as you told me 10 minutes ago.
You didn't know it 10 days ago.
I didn't know it 10 days ago. I just knew it
the same time we did. Yeah. He's just saying these arrived in the mail. We all had a chance to look at them.
That's right.
And they're giving their opinion based off, and they just basically got done with that. So it's the same thing. We're all in the same boat here. We either accept it, we modify it, we change it. It's up to
you. You don't think we should have got some input from the staff?
Well, if they got it earlier, but I don't know if they did or not. Did you get figured out until yesterday or the day before?
I looked at them this weekend, quite honestly. Then I discussed them with Marlon yesterday. So Marlon and I kind of formulated the three actually yesterday afternoon, and at about 4:30 I I finished this memo. So I could have certainly posted this, this morning probably, but that's as soon as I really knew what direction we were thinking, what we'd like to suggest to the board. And again, we received them the same time you did, which was last Thursday, Friday. And so, admittedly, we have more contact with the consultants. We've talked to them more than you have, and that's certainly one advantage we probably have. After talking to them, I have a little better eye handle on what their skill level is and so forth. But that's why the proposals are provided to us, is so you can see what they're saying, and maybe your opinion is different than mine. And, you know, it's the director's decision, of course, what you do here. But we're just trying to assist you in making a good choice for interviews. And the bottom line with these consultants is you could hire any of the six, and they could probably do the job for you. But we think there's probably a better qualified person out of the six. And we really hesitate to waste people's time with interviews if they're not really qualified to do the work or not as suitable as maybe other consultants, because it costs money to have these consultants do this work. It's going to cost them $10,000 or plus to do this proposal and then the interview process. So it costs money out of their pocket to do this. It's part of their overhead, of course.
Well, and one more thing. So every director is different, or everybody's different. Some want to hear our opinion early, and some don't want to hear our opinion at all until maybe the meeting, or if there's a toss-up in their mind between somebody. So we've got a little bit of problem with, do we provide that to you right away, or do we wait till the meeting to give what we think or what our recommendation is? So I would say if you want information before the selection is made and during the review period, let us know. Because some directors don't want it. And so I don't want to put that out to everybody, and then all of a sudden everybody's mind's kind of skewed of what they're looking at because of what we said. And so.
That's a good point, John. Everyone should know, I asked Martin to run down what the staff's thoughts were about why they were going to choose these three and not the other three. So that was me telling Martin, hey, I want to run down at the subcommittee meeting of that, because sometimes we get these and all it is, hey, you should take these three or no three with nothing. And I personally don't like that, so I wanted something. So there you have it. Did you want to take off a firm or add on a firm, Director Woodall, before?
No.
Any other directors? All right, I've got something that I just want to throw out there and maybe make a friendly amendment. But first I want to find out from staff if they think it's feasible. July 7th is a conflict for me, and I'd love to be there to listen to these presentations. Is June 27th, it's a Monday, is that too soon for these firms to have their presentation put together? And does that work for the other members of this subcommittee? I'd hate to be selfish on this one and change from one day to another and block out a couple of...
As an alternate, I'll be in Kearney.
I think I'm okay.
I think I'm okay.
Is that enough time, June 27th?
I'm not sure. Maybe. How many weeks?
Two. A week and a half earlier than what they thought. Either that or I was thinking Friday, July 1st.
I was thinking about either, what about Tuesday, is it the 5th?
You're out of town, pretty much.
Okay.
I've got June 27th or July 1st.
July 1st is what day? Is that a week?
That's a Friday.
Friday?
No, let's not do Friday now.
Okay.
I can always come in on the weekends.
Okay.
So you think June 27th is too soon?
I think it's probably too soon. I haven't talked to the consultants. I mean,
well, then we'll keep it there. And just FYI to the alternate.
Stand by.
I'm going to call you in. I know I'm not going to be there on July 7th. So I've got a family wedding. All right.
Mr. Would you consider appointing a second alternate, since we know where our first alternate will be needed for the committee? Let's see if you can get a second alternate.
Yep. Director Bonnet, do you mind giving me a second? All right. Good point. All right. Any other questions, comments, concerns? All right. Roll call.
Okay. Thompson.
Yes.
Woodall.
No.
Fowler.
Yes.
Okay. John Connolly.
Yes.
Chairperson.
Yes. All right. We are adjourned.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm
Okay.
I'm calling the Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee meeting to order. A copy of the Open Meetings Act posted at the rear and also in the hallway. With that, now, quorum call, please.
Fred Conley. Leahy.
Here.
Teaser.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
And John Conley.
And Tim Fowler will be
coming
in as alternate.
Okay, Fowler.
Here.
And Chair.
Here.
Okay.
Next item is the adoption agenda.
Move.
Second.
Roll call.
Leahy.
Yes.
Teaser.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
And Fowler.
Yes.
And Chair.
Yes. I have here an affidavit of proof of publication of tonight's meeting notice, and that will become part of our permanent records. Now moving to item six, review and recommendation on bids for the Hell Creek Grade Stabilization Project, Eric Williams and Dave Lampe with Felsberg, Holt, and Ulvig.
Thank you. This is for the confluence of Hell Creek as it meets the West Papio. The district purchased some former UP railroad right-of-way, which does include the former rail bridge where Hell Creek crosses right there. You can see the small black box shows the location of the project. Just north of Giles Road, about 108th Street is right where the words are. And so we've talked about this project in the past. You can go to the next page. Has the this shows a little bit closer view of the project itself. From the right, you can see Hell Creek coming down and crossing under the railroad bridge. The slab under the bridge is destabilized. It's in three sections, so they're falling down, and it has a sheet pile that's failed. So the new design is to reconstruct the slab under the bridge and put in two steps of sheet pile down into a plunge pool, and then point to Hell Creek down into the West Papio. And so we received bids on May 25th. And we received three bids, as well as some other interest from other contractors in the project as well, who did not bid. But the bids range from $754,653 up to $941,607. The engineer's estimate on this project was $809,645. And so the low bid was received from Valley Corporation. And the recommendation is to accept the low bid and sign a contract with construction contract with Valley Corporation for $754,653.37.
Thank you, Chair. I'd entertain a motion.
A motion for staff recommendation.
Second.
Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none, directors?
Director Thompson. Eric, I'm a little bit confused.
Mm-hmm.
The other night when we interviewed for the trail,
yep,
had a lot of folks, and I thought David Lampe was one of them, talking about the what can be done with that project. Perhaps I should have known that this was going on.
Yep. Sorry.
Tell me the connection between this, what we're talking now, and what we heard at the potential trail awardee.
Yeah, sorry, there are two separate creek locations that cross under that same rail corridor. This is Hell Creek, which is farther south. We basically did not discuss Hell Creek during the trail consultant selection process. We talked about
some of the consultants
Oak Hills.
May have.
They may have, but this project has been in process for about a year now. It was essentially considered an emergency repair. We talked to the Corps and qualified for emergency repair funds, but the timing for their design and construction was probably too long. We could actually move faster with Omaha, La Vista, and the NRD directly. So
I was needlessly impressed by one or two consultants.
Okay. Yep, they were talking about it, but we've been working on this for about a year now. There was some initial work and then a full-scale design, which is now all the way ready for construction.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Teaser.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
And Chair.
Yes. Now moving on to item 7, is review and recommendation on bids received for aerial application of herbicide for the Lower Platte Weed Management Program. Paul Woodward, please.
Good evening. Just going to review two bids we received for the spraying of the invasive weeds on the Lower Platte River and the Elkhorn and the tributaries. Work we've had a five-year contract to do up to this point. And if you would go down to the next page just to review the different bids we did receive. We got two, one from Skycopters, who was our previous, or was our contractor we were working with. They're out of Kansas. And then Provine Helicopters is the other bidder at this time. They were out of Mississippi. Close bids, but it did come down to each of them just provided their unit costs. So these actual units are just estimates of what we think it would take to spray approximately 200 acres. So this cost may vary from year to year depending on how many acres we actually do spray. But it was a difference about $3,000 between the two. And Provine Helicopters is actually during this comparison, what we consider the lowest apparent bid. Just to look at that, we are also in the process, which should come to you next month, of amending the interlocal agreement for this work. Currently, our limit is $60,000 for the year, and usually it takes not only this money to spend on the spraying, but it takes additional money to actually go out. You see the second optional item there is to do a survey, which would mean we go up in the helicopter beforehand, try to pinpoint the areas of phragmites. We just got the costs from these contractors. We may not actually use them for that service. There's probably cheaper helicopter services in the area that don't actually do the spraying, but they would be able to provide us the ability to go out and find the phragmites. So there's other costs like that to kind of add on. So the proposal right now for the amendment would be to have every NRD pitch in $30,000 instead of $20,000. But what's before you tonight is just to approve the bids that we did receive and to work on a contract with Provine Helicopters.
Chair to entertain a motion.
Move staff recommendation.
Second. Okay. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Directors? Director Jaff.
Will all of the affected landowners get notification before spring?
All the landowners are actually required to sign an agreement that, you know, kind of sign up for the service. They do that ahead of time. Then we actually work with them. If they're actually spraying an invasive species like phragmites or purple loosestrife, they help pay for the cost of it, approximately half the cost. If it's not an invasive species and they would like us to work on spraying it, that's kind of the additional work that would be possible here would be to look at some of the other species that take over the area in the river, which would be the cedar or cottonwoods. So looking at those, or not cedar, the willows and cottonwoods. And so in that case, they wouldn't be required to pick up half because it's not an invasive species requirement. But yeah, all the landowners do know they've signed up ahead of time that we were going to be spraying in those areas.
Or let's say you find some phragmites on somebody that's not signed up. How do you approach that situation?
We work ahead of time through the weed superintendents of each county to contact that landowner directly, see if they want to sign up, but they would have to sign an agreement or a release to begin with before we would work there.
I see your hand up. Yeah, Director Leahy, please.
Yeah. What other work has this helicopter company done in the local area?
Okay.
For us or another one of the past?
We did talk to, of course, we knew Skycopters pretty well, had talked with them and been working with them for 5 years. We did talk with Provine in a phone interview kind of thing, just to feel like where they were at. They are doing work in central Nebraska along the Platte River now with the central Nebraska weed management area along the Platte River there. I think that's probably their only contract right now, but they're doing quite a bit of work in both Nebraska and then our mid-states area here.
I'm just sort of curious how it works when a company from Mississippi has mobilization cost of $1,000 and the company from Kansas has a cost of $4,000. And my concern would be, does that cost change because, let's say, their contract in central Nebraska runs out, they don't have the helicopters in the area anymore, and we need them 2 years from now, and then they have to plug back. So sometimes I think, I mean, this is a difference of $3,000 in the estimates.
Right.
Sometimes maybe going with a company you know that, I mean, have they done good work for us?
Yes, they have.
It's maybe better than a company so far away that necessarily you don't know and don't have maybe a great work history on them. So that's my thought. I don't think I'm going to pay for this, but I'm not going to make a secondary motion at this time.
Well, one item we would add that the Provine is not going to charge us for downtime. For example, if they get here and there's inclement weather and they can't fly, they will not bill the district for that time, which helicopters does and would have. That was one issue. And then also there's been – I'd say, Rich, has there been a change of personnel at Skycopters that has affected?
Yeah, the original copter pilot, Lyle, had a heart attack, and he was no longer qualified to fly. And they have, for the last 2 years, they've had a kind of a second stringer, and we didn't really get the results. He didn't fly nearly as well, and you could tell a big difference.
I stand corrected.
Paul, I've got a question about how you determine after the fact the quantities that have been applied.
Well, okay, so in the bid form, it was only required that they submit the unit prices. That's been done in a couple other contracts that they bid this work out similarly before. I think the idea for the estimated quantity was just to provide the comparison.
No, that's not what I'm asking. Once it's been, you've got a price, how do you determine that they've done 50 acres here or 100 acres there? Do you go in the field and survey? How do you determine the quantity that we're going to pay them?
No, their equipment on the helicopter is required to GPS all the locations when the sprayer is on. So they actually get this track map of what they've actually sprayed. From the helicopter, and then that's brought back in and analyzed by us in Lower Platte North and figured out what exactly was sprayed as far as acres.
And the chemical on the application has a warranty. So if they don't get the chemical doesn't kill something that year, then they can reapply.
Sounds good. Any other questions or comments? Roll call on the motion, please.
Thompson.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Lee.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
And Chair.
Yes. Next item, item 8, is review and recommendation on Papio Hydrology contract with Fire Engineering. Amanda Grant and Mike Sotak with Fire.
Hi. Evening.
Evening.
I can maybe just go to the PowerPoint. So for your consideration tonight is a contract with Fire Engineering for an update of Papio Hydrology and also to waive the consultant selection process to hire them to do this work. And so I have just a couple of slides here. This is from a presentation we did to the rest, some other people in the country when a FEMA training about where we're at with our flood study. But I think this will help give everyone a picture of what this Papio hydrology update, how that fits into our current project and why it's important. So this goes way back. 2003 is FEMA's big push to remap and get more detailed flood study information for populated areas. And so Omaha was really one of those areas that needed an update. And so this Papio Creek was identified as needing new flood data way back, maybe even before 2003. But in 2003, we began the flood study, the detailed flood study, which includes the hydrology and hydraulics to create the flood maps. And we did that on the West Papio Basin in 2003. Those maps came out in 2010, and I know many of you were on the board. There was a big effort at that time of public outreach. There's a lot, 700-plus new homes in the floodplain, and it was a pretty big deal because of all the development, and the maps hadn't been updated for a long time, frankly. So also identified was a detailed flood study on the Big and the Little Papio, and that contract was signed. It's an agreement that we sign with FEMA as a cooperating partner to help get these flood studies done, and that was signed in June of 2008. And the Corps of Engineers had money through their flood mitigation program, a program that they had that they were going to do the hydrology and the hydraulics and produce these maps. And then FEMA was going to take that information and print the maps and contribute. So the district, we were still involved. We signed the agreement to complete the work, but we had no financial contribution in this project. $2 million was earmarked. So that's how long ago this, because I think they were still doing earmarks and all that. And so $2 million was earmarked to do the Big and Little Papio, and then the other $400,000 came from FEMA for this work. So this is the original schedule, and this is the flood study that triggered the levee accreditation and a lot of the other things that we've been working on for a number of years. So we started 2008. 2009, the Corps of Engineers was supposed to complete the hydrology hydraulics, 2012 preliminary maps, and then 2013 would have been official published flood maps. And that's still a long process, but that was the track that this was on. So here's where we are now, and we began 2008. The Corps did complete the hydrology and a lot of the topo work for the study. And then in 2010, they had the hydrology, and that's really those peak flows that you use to run through the geometry of the creeks to set the flood elevations. So they completed that hydrology and got that approved by FEMA. They started the hydraulics, and then their funding stalled out big time. And it was program problems for them. It was the year that 2011, I think, was the year they had the continuing resolution. And then that delayed their budget, and things just got really messed up there. And they kept trying to get it started again and trying to get funding. And we worked with FEMA this whole time and let them know that the schedule was delayed. But the bottom line to that was in 2014, we kind of had the big meeting, like, is this ever going to get funded? Because we started so long ago. And the Corps said, no, we can't get the money to finish it. They had spent the money that they had, but they weren't done, and they weren't going to get the money to finish it. And so FEMA said, we will pick up the rest of the hydraulics. They had some money in our region, and so they're called the STAR team, but it's the FEMA consultant was going to finish the hydraulics. And so here is where we sit today. In March of this year, they finished those hydraulics. They had these preliminary work map type, not preliminary maps, but this work map type product for us and the communities to look at. And there's some significant changes, and in particular on the Little Papio through Exarban Village, the 72nd and Pacific area, and more. I mean, that's just one of the areas that's popping up in my head as a really significant impact. And so then their plan is to move on and final, published maps at the earliest would be 2019. And so this is now an 11-year process. And when this is called challenges because it was from another presentation talking to other folks in the country about challenges we have. But what's really happened is we know when you do these flood studies, that the regular process is 5 to 6 years, and things are going to change during that time. But now we're talking 11 years, and things have really changed. And two major things are NOAA, which is the, I'm going to say it wrong, but National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, they came out with new rainfall intensities and new rainfall distribution patterns. We have not had new data in our area since, I think, 1964. So it's not like those come out all the time, and it did during this process. So that was pretty major. And then there's been new contour data flown. There's been development that's occurred. And then also, in our case here, we have moved forward with the Papio Watershed Plan. And so two flood control reservoirs one's done, one's almost done, and two are in final design phase. So by 2019 would be potentially under construction. And so those all have major impacts to those peak flows. And so I think you're going to have some, that these are always, in progress, and the maps, the minute they come out, they're going to be outdated. But, in this case, it's like, whoa, this is kind of big things that need to be updated, and I'm not sure we can move forward. But keep in mind, we've have a $2.4 million investment already in the data that's there. So just briefly, because all this technical data about the rainfall distributions and intensities, but the 100-year, which is what the FEMA floodplain is based on, did go up from, in our area, from 6.7 inches to 7.2. The 500-year went up an inch, almost 2 inches, even more. And so that impacts the amount of peak flows. And you would think that would increase that, right? And that's probably true. But after they published those rainfall intensities in probably 2013, those came out either later that year or in 2014. I don't remember. They published new rainfall distribution patterns. And so that's how the rainfall, how it falls over time. And it's this whole technical paper, and they analyzed storms, thousands and thousands of storms, and they come up with these distribution patterns. This is our quartile where we are at. And so this is just to give you, this is showing a range of these distributions that the rainfall could have. And without getting into it too much, this gray line is the type 2 rainfall distribution that has generally been the typical rainfall pattern for our area for a very, very long time. This red line is a rainfall distribution pattern, that the state of Wyoming had analyzed and had approved through FEMA. And these slides came from FIRA Engineering. I should have mentioned that earlier. These are not from my presentation, but they came from FIRA. And then here's a different distribution from that new updated Atlas 14 from NOAA. So you can see there's a big difference, and the impact of when that rain falls and how fast it falls can make a huge difference on peak flows. And so this slide is really very preliminary data, and this is not anything that we would bank on, but what it's showing is this top blue line is, what kind of flows we're looking at from the study right now with the dams. This orange line, here's the impact, 5,000 plus CFS. And then when you look at the new distribution patterns, could be even potentially lower. So I think this is the last slide. I'm going to leave that schedule up there. This is the current schedule where we're sitting at. So I just wanted to let you know. So this is kind of a supplement to all of this flood study that we've been working on all along. And the reason that we think it's so important is because, us, the communities, all the communities in the Omaha metro area have to back up this flood study and talk to those 1,000-plus people who would be in the floodplain. And I really think that it's in our best interest to look at all the new data and make a decision on what those flood maps need to look at, rather than just move forward and print what we have right now. I think it's gotten to a point where the data that's available is something that we need to consider. So that's why we think it's important. I think this particular team with FIRA and Applied Weather Associates, that's Mike Sotak and Applied Weather Associates is the team that worked together on the probable maximum precipitation study, which is the study that's used to design high hazard dams for the state of Nebraska. So that was the team that developed that study too, and was approved by the state. They're certainly, I would say, the most knowledgeable, and they understand those rainfall distribution patterns enough to give us some information to know that it would impact our flood study. So I think they're the right team to do that. And then the timing is the last issue for the waiver. We did enter into a small contract so that they could look at some real preliminary numbers, because FEMA has spent a lot of money, and I've seen our matrix. You see our timeline, and it doesn't look good to Congress about where this flood study is sitting. It was supposed to be done in 2013, and now it's 2019. It's been on hold for a long time, and it's got bad matrix. They want to get it done, but they do understand the importance of credible data, and they're really pushing. They need their data that's out there to be credible for people to understand and get behind them on the flood studies. So I think they're going to come around, but they do need us to show them that this could be a significant change. And so we did this preliminary study. We're going to meet with them in June, show them that we think that this is significant and we need to look at it, and then we'd like to execute this contract. And so I know that's a lot, but if you have any questions, Mike Sotek is here to help answer them. And Lori and myself, we work with FEMA quite a bit.
Thank you, Lori. Anyone care to make a motion on this subject?
Please pass.
Is there a second?
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Anybody in the public wish to speak to this? Do you have your hand up, or are you just walking around?
Both.
Sean Malotz, 10404 North 132nd Street. First, I think it's great that there's going to be additional studies regarding the flood issues, but I guess I have a couple questions regarding the contract and regarding the issues. In the memo, well, following quite a few of these contracts in the past, I've noticed that it's pretty important to pay attention to the language and the scope of the contract and et cetera. So I had a couple comments regarding that. First, on Exhibit A of the contract, and I think it's on page...
What contract?
The one that... The proposal or the... Yeah, this is the contract that's in your packet, Scott.
You got one, Kurt?
Nobody
there's
it.
There's
pull it up on the board.
Huh?
It's not in the packet. We'll pull it up on the board.
It was in that packet.
It's not in the director's packet.
Oh, okay. There's quite a few references within this document about construction and such. Should those be marked as not applicable or lined out in this contract? Because my understanding, there's no construction involved in this whole project.
I'll have to ask the consultant.
And then...
Go ahead, Mike.
The EJCDC contract, so it's a very long and intended to be a very inclusive contract. And so we've gone back and forth. The entity just, in fact, had their attorneys review this entire thing. I can tell you that in the three attorneys I've worked with, we've had three different opinions about whether this is stricken. And so the general direction from EJCDC is don't strike stuff. If it doesn't apply, it doesn't apply. And so in this case, they talk about study phase, preliminary design, final design, construction. It's usually worded if construction. Since there is no construction defined here, then anything related to construction in the contract would apply. And what that saves is having to go back from the same contract every time and kind of reinvent the wheel every time. And so well, Steve's probably better qualified to...
Well, and if you stop right there, you know, there's different sections in here where you have NA. So that's kind of counterintuitive of what...
Well, let's look what it says. If the owner's already identified one or more potential solutions, they have not. So NA.
Right. So I guess if that's what the board wants...
Rouse, are you comfortable with the contract as it's presented?
Yes.
I understand.
So we have a legal counsel.
It's a standard contract. However, you know, there's quite a few sections in there that don't apply. And if you're signing a document... It gives progress in those areas, should they occur, I suppose.
I think that's been answered. Let's move to your next item.
Attachment 1, Exhibit A, the project management. There's a note that there is a client stakeholder meeting. Two questions. Can I be involved as a stakeholder? And number two, if not, will the public be notified of these stakeholder meetings?
I believe Amanda would be just somebody from the particular affected zones.
Well, at this stage, you know, this is really FEMA, and I mean, you're trying to get flow. I mean, it's not that you're producing flood maps. I mean, certainly there's those and communities have represented at those maps.
Is that a FEMA decision, though, who's included?
No, I think it's the Papio NRD.
You know, I think we're kind of off the path of our, you know, this is...
This is way down the road. Okay. We'll decide that more further down the road when we get
who's
to that point.
Who's will? Time. The board will or FIRA will?
We're not at that point in time, so I can't answer that correctly.
But I mean, who's going to make the decision?
Again, we're not at that point in time. I can't answer that correctly. When we get to that point in time, then we'll determine if FEMA has input or the Corps or the communities or who. And then we will decide that process.
So you sign the agreement and then you make those decisions after?
You know, the normal FEMA process for the hydrology reports is that, you know, we have to work through something that FEMA can approve. So it's not that there's public input prior to that. All the models are available during the preliminary map stage, and then any appeals and protests take place during that time, and then they're corrected if need be.
Right.
So the technical data is really...
But that would be after the fact, though, wouldn't it? Rather than during, as this implies. I guess that's just my question, something for this board.
The public input comes before the final production of the maps.
Before final map production.
Which is different than the stakeholder meetings.
On the technical data, the public would not be involved.
But that's different than the stakeholder meetings.
Right. It's different. Yes. Because this is a study to present to FEMA.
Right.
The deliverable from this contract is a hydrology model and study to go to FEMA.
Right. So there would be no involvement.
By the public at all?
Yes.
Okay. I guess that's interesting. Then it probably shouldn't even be in that section of the document, I would imagine, if you're not going to have stakeholders involved. But I guess another question I would have, at the bottom of that same page, it refers to the analysis, and you're going to use a Wyoming report. From the map you showed earlier, that Wyoming's not in the same region as Nebraska, so I was curious why you were using Wyoming for your model for part of this.
So what it says, we're going to do a process. So the hydrometeorological consultant we're working with, Applied Weather Association, just recently worked in Wyoming. And so the distributions they showed there were just an example of a product. And so what we were trying to say is that they've already, our subconsultant already has experience getting this process through. And so when we say similar to a Wyoming distribution, what we're saying is we're developing something specific for this area. And some of the, and a lot of the storms that were used for the Wyoming distribution are going to be used for here too. You know, Sydney, Nebraska 2010, et cetera. So you use all these forms, these storms, and then what they do is what they say, they transposition the storms to say, what's the maximum they can rate in Omaha, Nebraska, or in different parts of this watershed. So we're not using Wyoming, we're using some Wyoming information. The reference to that had to do with the fact that our subconsultant already got this process through Wyoming, or through FEMA, with that Wyoming storm. So it'll end up being something similar to that process is what that was intended to be.
Okay. And then there is a reference to the four regions, four different locations that's going to be used for the assessment, and it says it will be determined by the Papua NRD. Will that be by board, staff, or I guess I was going to ask if the stakeholder group would be involved, but since there isn't any.
Sean, what that is that what we said is that one of the things we've been asked to do is we're preparing a hydrology study, and then we're submitting that to FEMA hopefully for their acceptance. FEMA is then going to take our hydrology and then do their own hydraulics. But one of the things we said was, as a kind of a gut check to see what the potential results were from our hydrology, we're going to look at four different areas. And the NRD has a long history of maps looking at through downtown Papillion, the Altec area, I think 90 or 84th and Center or something, and then Exarch Village. So that's just examples of four areas where we're going to actually do some preliminary hydraulic work so that the NRD, you know, if there isn't much of a change, it doesn't make sense to bother and go through this process with FEMA. If what we come up with preliminarily in those four areas shows that there's a value in continuing this, so those four, they're just areas to kind of show kind of a gut check as to what kind of sense could, or what kind of difference could this make on the map. So they're not particular to anything other than just showing potential value of doing the overall picture.
So help me understand the purpose of the report other than, you know, the rainfall. Is it more for the flood insurance issues, people out of the flood
claim? The goal for us would be to remove two things. Number one, remove as many of the new properties, but also potentially some existing properties from the floodplain so that they don't have to pay flood insurance. That's a big savings. It also helps with development in that area. You don't have to raise things as high, et cetera, within the rules of floodplain development.
Right.
And then the second part of that is there, you know, like the Papillion has some levees there, and if the water surface elevation of the regulated storm comes down, they don't have to build them as high. So it saves taxpayers money there. So the goal of this is to make
Okay. All right. Who was the firm that did the original $2 million part of the study?
The Corps of Engineers.
The Corps did it themselves.
Yeah. I don't think they have a consultant. They did it themselves.
Okay.
They're a firm.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments or from the public? Directors? Director Jeff.
Mike, could you go to the...
You did.
Okay.
I don't want to steal any of Amanda's thunder.
Okay, my dilemma is, and I hope you can answer. Apparently, the rainfall is increased or being more intense, so that we went from 6.7 or to 7.2.
Yes, sir.
If we update this, then isn't there going to be more, because you got more rain, more property could be in the flood way. Therefore, more people may have to pay flood insurance and things like that.
If we thought that was the case, we wouldn't have proposed the study. So there's two things that are happening. Number one, the rainfall amounts. Mm-hmm. So six in Omaha, instead of being 6.7 inches, 7.28. Mm-hmm. The more important thing is that we're looking at the temporal distribution. So Amanda kind of describes that. That's those graphs where some temporal distribution just means what's the rate the rainfall falls over time. Mm-hmm. So if we go to that graph real quick, maybe the one with the three hydrographs on it or distributions on it. Is that the other one?
Yeah, I'm
sorry. So the most important thing to look at when we – the other right there. So the most important thing to look at when we look at this graph is the steepness of the center part of the line. Mm-hmm. Okay, because what the steepness means, you're getting a whole lot of rain falling in a very short amount of time. What we found is that this information is so old that the one in the middle, that's the steepest rising limb, as you can see the gray one, that's the SCS type 2 that's always been used for this. So the steepness of that center part there, as you can see, is a lot steeper than the orange and the blue. And what happens is when you apply that over a basin and you have time of concentrations that are short, a matter of hours, anything that's shorter within that time frame there, what happens is you get all the rain that just falls at once. So one of the things we found is that meteorologically, not we found, our consultants found, and weather people have found, is that that's almost, it's physically impossible for the rain to fall that fast. It's physically impossible for that volume of rain to fall in that time frame. So what's more realistic, and so these are, and I want to point out, these other storms here are very intense, very hard storms. But they're at the outer edge of all of the different storms that have occurred that we use in this transposition. It's a very interesting report, actually. These are still at the outer edge, the conservative value of how fast rain can fall physically in Omaha, Nebraska, given all kinds of things, temperature, climate, wind. They factor in all those meteorological factors. So it's the temporal distributions that are shown here that are now you use that comes with the new rainfall amount. So although we have more rainfall coming, what we're saying is that middle section, it isn't coming down as fast. And that middle section is what generates the peak flows. So we looked at this for the dams, WP6 and 7. It doesn't end up making a difference in the design of the dam because dam's a volume thing. But in levees, when we're talking about peak flows, what we're finding is that we're designing these levees for, you know, the top 3 foot of the levees might only be for an hour and a half. And we spend all that extra money raising levees, you're well aware of. Whereas now with this, what happens is that the peak flows go down. So the volume goes up with higher rainfall, but that peak discharge, which is so important with regards to floodplain mapping and levee construction, goes down. That's the preliminary information we found. That's what we're going to keep working towards. So that initial study we talked about was really to get our – because we wanted to give some preliminary information to FEMA by June, that initial study went to our sub-consultant so that they could start working on those storms to make sure that the Wyoming storms, et cetera, that they had in the books when they transpositioned those to Omaha, that we're going to get a similar answer.
Go ahead, John.
So if – in theory, we should be able to take people that were in the floodplain out of the floodplain.
That's the goal.
All right.
I'll go to that other graph that has the what shows what the reservoirs have dropped. The Mike, and go to that again because it's half what you've already done building reservoirs. So this clearly demonstrates that these numbers hold true and the process hold true, that what you've done by constructing your reservoirs is you've reduced it by half. And then with the new data that's available, then we get it to an even better state. So what you're talking about is you're bringing thousands, perhaps thousands of people out of the floodplain that pay anywhere from $100 a month to $5,000 a year.
Yeah, it's the minimum is a lot more than that now. Yeah, it's not 100 anymore.
And not only your businesses and separate from protecting lives, but also just from the pure economic aspect of it. So, and then you're talking about maybe when we're talking about $20 million to raise the levies in Papillion, you might be 11 or 10
or 1
or less.
Yeah.
So it's got huge economic implications, not only for the district, but for everybody that we've served and why we've built these projects. And we've had nothing but horrible news on floodplains since we've been involved with FEMA. And they've constantly expanded. They've grown, and they continue to grow.
This is going to happen all across the country. You're at the front end of it, but this is going to happen all across the country.
And I think it's important that we look at it and know and don't just come out with these maps on the same path and put all these, you know, because I think Mike's right, we're just ahead of it, but I mean, this is the published data to use from here on out. So when we move forward, I think it would, you know, we'd be using this. So I think we need to incorporate it now while we can.
It's why we exist. It's why we have NRDs in the state. One of the main reasons is for exactly this, to be on the cutting edge out front, saying this is the correct data, this is what we should do. That's what we should do.
Director Leahy had a question or comment.
Yeah, help me understand sort of the timeline of the contract or this contract. So we've already had a contract of $25,000, right, in mid-May for an initial scope. Is that what you're going to FEMA with that information from that initial scope, this, in June, and then if FEMA says, okay, this looks intriguing, move ahead, then we execute this $167,000 contract? And my question is, if we go to FEMA in June and we say, here's the prelim, don't you think this would be interesting? And they say, nope. Are we stuck with this $167,000, and do we have to move ahead then if I run this study when it may be good information? But what good is it to us if we can't give it to FEMA and change these all maps? And then I have another question after that. But.
Well, this is it's an hourly not to exceed contract. So, you know, we just wouldn't do the work if they weren't on board. Okay. And, you know, I will tell you, I mean, their whole goal at FEMA now is credible information with the communities behind you. That's the only way they get things done. And so I think they're going to be really receptive. And so if we're hopeful that the information is.
But at the same time, they want to move ahead.
But right, so that is.
And there's already been a preliminary meeting, too.
They do know, yeah. They know what we're doing. They know what impacts it might have to the schedule. And that was their concession was, okay, you know, we understand that, so give us more data and we'll make a decision here in June. Yep. So.
And more good news is that our sub-consultant we're working with has already navigated that path in Wyoming to get it through FEMA, so that's good news.
All right. And then the other question I had was, so you're going to be really looking at the NOAA new data and incorporating that into this study and the dam sites that we built since whatever year. Who's looking at how much the development has expanded in the suburbs and across the district? Has that already been done as FEMA, or is that going to be part of this study too? Because, I mean, some of that would be a little bit of a wash where we won't see as good of the benefits that we see, and it may reduce 1,000 homes in the floodplain, but it's going to change which 1,000 homes that's going to be. So I'm just wondering who's looking at the development, because I think that's a key piece that sometimes is brushed aside.
So you're talking about development that's happened over this 11 years?
Yes.
So I think that we are going to, and I should mention this, I should have mentioned it earlier, but you know, they've already paid to run the hydraulics, so we are going to have to probably pay someone to do the hydraulics again. And the cheapest way to do that, and I don't want to make that sound like it's the worst way, but you know, they have used 2004 LIDAR data, which is that's what the model's set up with, that's what the cross sections are cut with. It would be very expensive to update all those and do all those new survey with new data. So to answer your question, I think the development that's happened in that time is one of those things that we may just have to give on, that we just,
so we just
can't incorporate.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that being said,
that, like,
we use future land uses for the studies, so there, it's incorporated in that sense.
Right.
So for flows and things,
well,
it's
the
incorporated.
Well, future land uses, we've anticipated full build-out.
Yes.
So we've already anticipated that the watershed's going to be fully developed.
So I think Amanda answered a question more about topography than she did about the development, because the model will consider all the future build-out of the watershed.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Sorry, no, not it won't incorporate development that's happened. The other thing, too, about the about as we move forward in the costs of this. So the partnership is the entity that most of the Omaha metro communities are involved in. And so in June, we'll be asking that group, and we have already talked with them about contributing $150,000 towards the hydrology and hydraulics of this study. It's certainly in the best interest of these communities to do that, and the partnership is a good mechanism for all of us to work together to help get that study complete. So they'll be voting on that in June, and I suspect that that would be approved.
Amanda, if that's approved, does that reduce the $167,000 that this contract would contemplate?
It would, but I'll tell you what, we think that the hydraulics is going to cost about $300,000. So we think that between the hydrology, which is we've already done a $25,000 contract, and now we have this $167,000, so about $200,000, and then we think another $300,000 to run the hydraulics. So that $150,000 would go towards that $500,000.
Add another $150,000 above what we're seeing tonight.
Right. And as we progress with this and see where we're at.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You want to go again?
Yeah, why necessarily have to do the hydraulics? We're already going to assume the full build-out, which is the worst-case scenario.
So it's full build-out peak flows. So that gives you the peak flow coming through, but you still need to run that against the geometry of the channel and the topography to come up with the elevation and set that.
Gotcha.
Okay. Director Jeff?
Will this new data be, can it be used in other parts of the state?
Yeah.
Or is it just going to be for the Omaha area?
So there's different zones in there. Amanda showed you one of the, if you look at NOAA Atlas 14, it does whole U.S.
Right.
So anybody can take this and use it in a different part of the state, or Iowa, Ohio. That information is available to everybody now.
Right.
It literally came out months ago.
Any other questions or comments? Roll call on the motion, please.
Howard.
Yes.
Lee.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Chair.
Yes. Thank you all. That concludes our agenda. We are adjourned.
Anybody need to take a break?
Yep.
No?
I'll make it quick.
Well, we'll take a 5-minute recess.
The reporter called the NHS and went to one of the houses that wants water. It's not even drinkable. What they have right now.
Open Meeting Act is posted outside as previously announced in the behind this room. As a matter of policy, I will limit any general public comments to 3 minutes with that quorum call.
John Conley.
Here.
Frost.
Here.
Woodles.
Here.
Thompson. Here. Here. Adoption
agenda? Removed.
7:30.
The second?
Second.
Well,
roll call.
Ross.
Yeah.
Woodall.
Yes.
John Conley.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Adoption agenda?
Yes. I have before me proof of publication of the meeting. With that, we move to agenda item 6, review and recommendation of FY 2017 budget. With consultation, 1% resolution. John, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Every year we have a vote on the restricted funds authority for the district. And we did put a little explanation in there as far as the 2.5% lid. That is what we are allowed. We're allowed the growth due to real property, new constructions, existing buildings, improvements, things like that. If we want to have additional flexibility above that 2.5%, it is also allowed for a 1% increase above that. That does require 9 votes of the board, or 75%. And we also have listed the years and the votes, how they have ended up each one of those years. Again, the 1% does not raise taxes automatically. What it does is allows the district an additional 1% of growth in these categories that apply to your general expenditure lid. If there's any questions, I'll try to answer them. Carrie is also here if there's any questions, but it does give us additional, again, flexibility to respond. For example, take Prairie Queen Dam and Recreation Area. When we assign that to the city of Papillion, we still have maintenance costs for the dam. Those continue to apply to your lid. So as we continue to build structures and continue to have the maintenance on the dam portion, that continues to increase your lid expenses as time goes on. That's why it does help with allowing us to kind of be able to absorb those kind of things and still come under the lid compliance.
Are you guys working on the report?
Move the staff recommendation.
Second.
Okay. Any comments from the general public? Staff? Directors? Seeing none, roll call.
Ross?
No.
John Conley?
Yes.
Will?
No.
Conley?
Yes.
Yes. Please vote.
3-8.
Okay, thank you. Moving on. Item 7, review the recommendation of Rawson Creek Project, 69th and U Street right-of-way agreement with Builder Supply. Martin, good evening.
Good evening. Flipping tonight is Mike McIntosh with Lanford Nearson. He's represents Builder Supply. So I'll go to the map first. Bill, the first map. You can rotate it, it'd be helpful. Let's see here. First of all, this project area is near, it's in near Ralston, actually. It's in Omaha, I guess, is the proper way to describe it. But 72nd Street's here. This is Q Street at the very top end. Builder Supply is down at the bottom of the map. And then this is Funplex, which most of you probably know if you've had any grandkids or kids. And this is American Concrete Products, which has been purchased by Builder Supply. And so Ralston Creek actually extends the part that we always have talked about is extending from 72nd Street down to about here. And then there's a natural section in through here, and this is a big Papia Creek. So the area that proposed easement tonight we'll be talking about is from this point down to here. And the go next map, Bill. Give you a little bit of blow up of what the particular area of interest here. Again, Builder Supply is at the very bottom of the map, and then Ralston Creek's right down through here. What's being proposed by them is they're proposing to put in a street across this this creek, and as part of that, they want to vacate U Street, which is actually this part of U Street, I guess. That's kind of in a shaded condition. Why the district's involved in this process is kind of twofold. First of all, we own a little piece of property right here. We're not sure why the district owns this piece of property, but we own a piece of property.
I can tell you, but keep going.
And as such, anytime you vacate property, the neighbors of that property have some say, you might say, in what's done. Again, the district also maintains this creek and has for years. It was actually built prior to the NRD, by Douglas County and the Papua Watershed Board built the creek. Never actually finished it all the way down to the mouth, but they did do this section of it through here.
And so what's happened tonight, what's we're coming to you tonight is a proposal to have for the district to, I guess, agree with the vacation of this street, first of all, which will allow Lure Supply to develop this property in a uniform manner in exchange for the district to get an easement over this piece of property, which we don't have right now today, and also all the way down to the Big Papio. Go back to the map, Bill, if you could. We think it's pretty important to have control of this entire stretch of the creek. You move it up a little bit. This section has been kind of a pain for our staff for years because it's always constantly generating volunteer trees that end up down in the creek and eventually end up in our culvert. We have to clean out these trees. And so we like to go in there, and this is kind of a long-range thing, is to go in and clear out this creek of all the trees and just turn it back to a grass-vegetated channel, which will eliminate a lot of maintenance issues for the district and also provide a creek that's more free-flowing. Right now it's encumbered with the trees, and so the trees really restrict the flow some as you go down through the, as you go from this section down to here. So that's kind of an overview of what's being proposed. Again, there are lengthy agreements been prepared by your legal counsel and easements, but the exchange basically is the district to write a letter basically to the City of Omaha saying that you're not objecting to the vacation in exchange for this easement that Builder Supply will grant the district. And Mike can maybe add any additional comments that I've missed as part of this. He's been shepherding this through the planning department of the city.
The only other thing I'll add, Martin, if you can go back to the previous slide, we are also asking when the vacation happens, 50% of each side of the street goes to the adjacent property owner. So in that area where you own the little triangle piece of property, if we went through the standard vacation, half of the street in that area would go to the NRD. We're asking as part of this to agree to give the easements to release your claim to that part of U Street, that half of U Street that would be required as part of the vacation.
They are, in addition, as a side note, of course, the easement is over Ralston Creek. Plus, we have an easement be granted to us over the U Street for access and, you know, to get to the creek. So basically, the district's getting more than you have today. The present today, you have no easement over that. It's in Douglas County's name. You're getting an easement over the existing creek plus an easement over the vacated street to get down the street to maintain the creek. So it's really a win for the district in terms of maintenance of the creek. What you're giving up is land that really you don't use anyway. You couldn't use it's in the creek for the most part. It's in the creek, and it's in part of the street right away, which is, again, you're going to be using it for channel maintenance use. So the district wins, I think, in all cases, just if you are giving up that right to half right away, as Mike indicated. So, yeah.
Can we get a motion on the floor?
I move approval of the staff recommendation.
Second. Thank you. Anybody in the general public wish to make comment? Yeah. Russ comment.
Would you go back to the slide that you had just previously that showed the streets on there, particularly the one that cuts through between Builder's Supply and Concrete Products? That one just wrote to that one. That was it.
69th Street is what it's called, yeah.
That's fine. Where that new, well, it looks like a roadway goes through there, is that going to be an obstruction to the creek? And what provisions are you going to provide so it's not an obstruction to the creek?
It would be a culvert the same size as the culvert underneath the Big Papio Creek, which we district put in about 3 or 4 years ago. So they're going to match the same size of the pipe underneath the Big Papio.
Actually, yeah, we've been working with staff that we actually agreed to go 1 foot bigger in span and height. So it's actually a little bigger than the downstream culvert. And we'll be providing a drainage study with the floodplain development permit.
Thank you.
So that piece of land that we bought because there's a crappy damn house and a crappier garage on there, and it was bought out of, it's in floodplain way purposes back in
floodway
sometime, including we had to demolish a damn thing. Anyways, we're going to keep that land? I didn't hear you say that we're giving it up.
No, we're keeping this piece of, this triangle piece of land.
Why? Why don't we sell it to Builder Supply?
there'd be no use for them to have it because it's in the creek. Quite honestly.
So, whose office are we going to move there? That's a rhetorical question. Yeah. You don't have to answer that. But I voted no back in whenever the heck that was, 2008, 7, 6, 5, I don't know. John might remember. Teaser.
It was full of junk cars down there.
Yeah.
Bad spot. Yeah. Maybe buried there. Further east, but because Marlon and I debated this because he's got a memory much better than mine, and he couldn't recall any reason we would have ever purchased that land. But there was a house further east.
American Concrete wanted to move further south, is what the deal was.
They did it. Yeah.
Let's get rid of this house. It's affecting their business or some darn thing. I guess things change.
Well, it appears to be a win-win. Any other comment?
No, I don't.
Roll call.
Poodle.
Yes.
Ross.
Yes.
John Hunley.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
And Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you. Give me the result.
Perfect. Thanks, Mike. Thank you.
5-0.
Item 8, review and recommendation, Big Tapio Channel Project signed license agreement with Properties Ventures of Marion, Inc. Martin.
Okay, thank you. So the map, it looks like Bill's doing that, which is great. first of all, this is I-80. The Big Tapio runs up past the Westgate area, we call Westgate. There's a sign that's used to be called Mastertoons right at the corner here, and I'll give you a blow-up of that, but this is Grover Street. This is Papillion Parkway, and there's like a motel complex along the creek there, and then there's a couple of businesses. One's a Husker outfit, and then there's this auto glass place. Go to the next map. This is a map that kind of shows the right-of-way dislocation. 84th Street is actually owned by Department of Roads, so they own from basically all the way, including the road over to this line here. If you scroll down a little bit to the other direction, Bill, up a little bit, I guess, is the way I want to describe it. The district back in the 90s did a channel project here. I wasn't involved in it. As a side note, otherwise I'd have a better memory of some of these things. But they purchased a property, which is shaded here, this hatched area. And there's a sign actually at this location. We looked through our files and tried to figure out, was there some previous, agreement. We think there's probably been a verbal agreement in the past because the sign was not taken out when they did the channel project. It's on the edge of the right-of-way. It doesn't really impact the channel. But we think that probably there was a verbal agreement at the time that, hey, the sign can stay. You can continue to use it. But what happened over time is that this business, which is known by Autoglass now, it's a company, it's a national company, bought it a few months ago. this used to be called Mastertune, then it became Autotune, and it's been a couple different owners over the last 15 years or so, and people have kind of forgot. They don't have any copies of anything between them. But it clearly was, at the time, used by this company. Go to the next picture. The sign's in structurally in decent shape, but it's pretty ugly. It's been this way for probably the last 15 years or so. A couple things happened this spring. First of all, Autoglass Now, which is this Property Ventures of Marin County, in other words, purchased this property. They came to us and said, we'd like to use a sign for our business. We'll fix it up, paint it, replace all the plastic that's basically gone. We'll also, in addition to that, we'll agree to maintain this pavement here, which is actually on your property. We'll maintain the guardrail, too, which is on NRD property, in exchange for that, the right to do that. So in this... this is a sign that we're talking about. The City of Omaha has also came to us recently and said, this sign's in poor condition. You need to either take it out or fix it up, one or two. We're getting complaints from important people, probably city councilmen, that this sign is ugly. And so either you fix it up, and they're okay with rehabbing it, but you got to fix it up or take it down. And so what you have before you tonight is a proposal to grant a license to the Property Ventures of Marin. Be for 99 years. It could be a different term if you want it to be. They would go rehab the sign, take care of it, and they would get all the permits required to use the sign because it's not grandfathered because it's been there. Maintain the guardrail and the paved parking lot.
No payment would be made by them in exchange for all these things. The district and the Corps, if we decide the sign needs to go because of the channel project changes and for some reason here, that sign's got to go. They got to take it out at their cost. So basically this sign is on, it could be on short life. It could be a 5-year sign. It could be 10 years. It could be 20 years because knowing the Corps, things change. And likely there will be some change in this project at some point in the future. Maybe not next 10 years, but down the road it could be. So this agreement would allow or require them to take that sign down if that happens. As a side note, to take the sign down, it's about $1,000. Just to kind of let you know, it's not a lot of money, but to take it down to the ground, it's about $1,000 because I have checked into that cost. I'll be happy to answer any questions. That's kind of an overview of what's happened here with this sign.
Any questions for directors?
Well, are you going to get a motion, or
do you want? Oh, sorry,
you stand present. We get a vote on
the call. Thank you.
I move approval of staff recommendation.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any comments from the general public? Staff, Director Leahy, I'm sorry.
Yes, no worries. This all sounds fine, good, win-win, right? What really I find just real rich about this whole thing is something in there about the city telling us that this sign's in sad state of disrepair and that we need to go fix it. Well, John's laughing right now because he knows for about over the past year, I've been sending him little photographs of signs around our trails that are the city's jurisdiction that are in absolute disrepair, saying contact Brookbench and get these fixed. And beyond that, I don't just want our 1970s-style trail signs fixed. I want a whole new sort of way of going about how we trail up and mark and have signage around our trails that incorporate some of the cooler, newer signs that they're using in downtown Omaha, the wayfinding signs. And all we hear about from the city and the parks department is, oh, yeah, we're going to get to it, or we don't have any money, et cetera, et cetera. So I also contacted some very important people in the city of Omaha, and they are on board with sitting down with us to try to find a solution to improve our trail signs for the trail network. So I hope we can move ahead with that. These two very important people also carry a lot of weight in the city council government body, if you will. But I just found that just really chapped my you-know-what when I read that and I've been dealing with them for a year. So expect I'm actually going to send an email of a couple of these signs so the rest of the directors know what I'm talking about when I say these signs are in disrepair. So that's all I have to say. Otherwise, this is good to go in my book.
I think the sign's ugly. Just the fact of putting a new name on it doesn't beautify Omaha in any way. I'm surprised the city would let it be rehabbed. I'm disappointed that they would let it rehab.
I think they don't have the authority, quite honestly, to, if you do rehab it, they don't have the authority to say you can't put a sign there. Now, if it's a new sign, you have control over the style of it. If you have a monument sign, you could do this today, quite honestly, but back 20 years ago, you could do this because, you know, sign criteria have changed. But they're kind of, it's kind of a thing where it's a pre-existing sign. You're allowed to rehab it. So I agree, it's not real attractive. I like monument signs or signs that you see used today, but it's really the director's decision, whatever you want to do here. But we're just presenting this request from the owner of the adjacent property. So,
what happens if we vote, may I ask, follow up on this?
Yeah.
What if we vote no? What are they going to do with the sign?
We'll get a contract to take the sign down, probably, I'm guessing.
We'll have to take the sign down.
We'll take it. We have to take it down because it's on our property.
Not until they take down our sign.
It's on district
now,
property.
But are all of those signs involved here, are they all in the same post? Same set of posts.
Yeah, there's three.
There's actually three posts supporting one sign. So there's one, two, three.
But there's three signs there, aren't there?
Two.
No, there's the one here and there's one here.
Okay.
There's two different.
So they both come down then. If it
all come down.
We'd have to absorb the cost different.
You look for $1,000, it'd make the area look better.
Yes, it would.
I don't disagree with that.
I think this is a great opportunity for us to show the public, in this case, this business owner, our ability to cut a little red tape and make a reasonable accommodation to private enterprise. I'm curious, though, why staff came up with this lease agreement instead of just asking this property owner to take this little slice of property that has a sign on it off bar. I want to just cede it over to him permanently and be done with it.
Because the core.
The reason for that, the core required this property be acquired. But for some reason, they agreed that they had to let the sign remain. But this piece of land was required as part of the channel project under core criteria. So there's a reason why they thought we needed it, but I'm not sure why the sign remained, quite honestly, because I don't know the history of it.
Well, it was acquired before the district was probably formed.
Getting a new permit for a sign this size is extremely expensive for a small business owner, and I think it's reasonable for us to accommodate this business.
I think the thing we, staff felt was that probably there was some kind of verbal agreement, just that we never could find, unfortunately, the hard copy of the thing or to document it. But there had to be some agreement, otherwise it wouldn't have remained here 20 years. It would have been down right after the project was built, right after project construction. So,
we can talk for 2 minutes on a $300,000 project, and we talk for $1,000 sign. Director Thompson.
Just one final comment. Can we get them to say, brought you by Pappy, Missouri, or do you have a lower one?
We can ask.
I don't think we want to.
In the license, I don't think, Steve, there's a requirement they fix it right away, but they want to get fixed because they want to serve their business. They want to get this up and running. In fact, he actually came to me and said, can I paint it now without board action? I said, no, you can't do anything to this thing. The board takes some action. I said, well, I'll paint it just to make it look a little nicer in the meantime. I said, well, no, you can't do that. You got to wait till board action. So he actually wants to paint it today, tomorrow, if he had a chance.
Any further comments? Seeing none, roll call.
Woodle.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Ross.
Yeah.
John Conley.
Yes.
Ian Chairperson.
Yes. That concludes our agenda. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.